When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sport Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Recording on an Easter Monday, I had a little bit of a weekend relaxation. Well, besides Saturday at half past 12, of course. To look back on that Manchester United defeat, obviously 2-0 it finished to Manchester United, and then look ahead to a big game on Saturday at Goodison Park against Fulham. Me and Peter will take over the early part of the show before Lee does join us once he puts down his roast chicken and roast potatoes. Got his timings all wrong, apparently. So I'm sure we'll get a fuller explanation once he does appear. But Pete, obviously straight across to yourself. A game, obviously, at Old Trafford that was always going to be a difficult one. You know, I wouldn't think many Evertonians earmarked that game as one where we're going to pick up 8 points, 3 points, you know, in some way, shape or form. What was your take home from the performance? Were you disappointed with what you saw on Saturday?
It'd probably be too strong to say I was disappointed, but I don't think many people would disagree with me if I said that it's probably our worst performance under Sean Dyche. Now, regardless of who the opposition were, you know, regardless of where it was, you know, predictably before the game, all the talk was about, how little success we've had there and what a tall ask it was. And, you know, the headlines were being written before kickoff, really. But I thought we had spells of the game where we were wasteful. I thought we could have done a lot better. I'm sure we'll break down the game piece by piece in a mo, but I thought defensively we were uncharacteristically poor, sloppy, looked a bit off the pace to me. Although we did some good pressing in their half, when the ball came towards us, we just couldn't cope. And when they were switching play quickly and looking for that diagonal pass over the top of Ben Godfrey, we were just really slow to adapt. I thought maybe both on the pitch and perhaps also, you know, from the bench tactically, I think everyone could kind of, you know, see what was coming. And we're under tremendous pressure, and it was like it's a terrible analogy, but it's a bit like David and Goliath, really. It was like you know, two fighters throwing power punches at each other, and you just thought, if we can go ahead and get the goal, maybe then we can kind of compose ourselves and get something from the game. But if they went ahead first, you just didn't have a lot of hope for us, really. But I thought it was a really bitty performance from us. And I know we'll break down the tactics in a sec, but I think maybe a lot of Evertonians would be surprised with how he lined us up, because it really was effectively a 4-4-2. I expected Damari Gray to be on the right-hand side and Iwobi to kind of be in that energetic box-to-box midfield role that he developed under Frank Lampard, really, and he's had a lot of success with, and he knows it, and arguably is his best position. I think I fully expected him to slot in there, so I was really surprised when Iwobi started on the right hand side, and Gray was not only central but was quite high up the pitch, and wasn't really looking to get back into space or cover their six for the pass out. So it was really surprising how attacking we set up, really, and maybe some of that's kind of in response to the Anfield game, where I think, you know, the consensus is Ellis Sims was really, really isolated. So maybe he's thought, look, if we're going to play Sims, we've got to get someone up around him. And that's what he's asked Damari Gray to do. I don't think you can be too critical of Sean Dyche, because he's still working out his best team. He's still understanding, you know, the players and you know, their best positions and how he can kind of communicate with them and get information over to them. We were a big man down in terms of, you know, the Decore suspension. But I thought on the whole, we were poor for the Everton we've come to expect under Sean Dyche. I think that would be fair to say.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis there, to be honest. And it was, we knew, obviously, Ellis Sims obviously started the game. And the last time, as you say, you think back, you link it to the game at Anfield when he was very, very isolated, wasn't he? And we didn't get bodies around him. And it wasn't the kid's fault. You know, he was literally a lot of nerves he played with at Anfield as well. He was running around, you know, just burning off energy, just probably due to excitement and nerves and what have you. And he was more equipped to start at Old Trafford on Saturday, I thought. And I think you're right in what you said. You know, you've got the eye very pushed up almost in a 4-4-2 formation. A lot of fans would probably say that in recent weeks with Decore, he's always been the more advanced of that midfield three. You've almost been playing a semi 4-4-2 in a sense. But when you've got Damari Gray being the second striker, if you like, as opposed to Decore, who's naturally midfield minded, whereas Gray is naturally attacking minded, it becomes different. It becomes a more attacking 4-4-2 as opposed to a slightly more defensive one, if you like, because Decore will always drop in. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing that I noticed early on, probably the first 25 minutes, was how open the game was. And it was almost, you wanted to say to them, get your foot on the ball and just calm things down. Knock the ball around a little bit, Victor, knocking it around at the back. You know, stop rushing everything. It was end-to-end stuff. And, you know, United, they missed an open goal, didn't they, with Wan-Bissaka. Got to be scoring that after the... I think Anthony hit the post, didn't he? Wan-Bissaka on his left foot put the ball wide. Ellis Sims has a great chance to pull us 1-0 up as well. And all the time in the way, a lovely bit of football between him and Seamus Coleman. And he drags, he probably had too much time to think about it. And he totally scuffs the shot and the ball goes wide. And it was sort of then, he just thought, for me, you know, we don't give ourselves or put ourselves in a good position and give ourselves something to hold on to. And if we score there, maybe the game's a little bit different. Maybe then we go, right, okay, let's now go a little bit more defensive. We can try and hold on to this now. If we come away with the draw, then fine. But that was a pivotal moment, that, for me, where we missed that chance to go 1-0 up. But it was far too open, and it took us quite a long time to actually settle ourselves down into the game. And I think a lot of people were saying, you know, Dyche, in terms of the tactics, he's changed too much there. And there probably wasn't a great deal of change, really, in terms of how he approached other games. It was just the personnel probably just didn't fit. And when you, obviously, Ellis Sims, it's not his fault. He's coming, he's a central striker. But when you're playing Damari Gray, like you say, as a second striker, as opposed to Ablai Decore, his energy, his knowledge of being able to drop back into a midfield three as well, it becomes different. And you notice, you do notice, obviously, the little things that make a huge difference. And I think it was, is it Michael Greenall on Twitter, that he's very good with his analysis of obviously Everton's games. And he was saying, you know, he seems to think it was little things that were the difference. And because there was no Decore, you had Onana and Garner then sort of stepping up and stepping into space and maybe overcommitting at times. And what that was then doing was that was then obviously causing the problems that we had. I mean, how many times, Pete, you mentioned just then, that switch of play over Ben Godfrey's head. He got cut off, didn't he, a couple of times, which is probably what led to the tactical change at half times to bring on Mikhailenko. But United seemed to be able to pick us off at will, especially in that first 45.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems to be a tactic teams over the last three or four games have started to try and exploit, really. So I think in the initial games where Dyche came in, you know, particularly the 1-0 at Arsenal, that kind of low block that we drop into when the initial press hasn't worked was really effective in stopping teams from passing through as quickly, which was the big problem probably in, you know, toward the end of Frank Lampard's tenure, and arguably one of the, you know, the key reasons that we just couldn't get a win under him. But what teams seem to do now is that they're looking to try and not play through the lines against us and just hit the early ball, hit the early diagonal. Something Chelsea had a lot of success with, I thought, when we went away to them. I think other teams have tried to do it against us since, and it was something United just really, really exploited, particularly on the shoulder of Ben Godfrey. And Anthony just had so much success, didn't he? Had so much joy. And you would say United were really wasteful as well. I thought there was a point in the first half, it could have been about 3-3. And then the longer the half went on, the more points I ended up giving to United. I think they could have had 5 or 6 in that first half if they were more on it. I thought Jordan Pickford was absolutely sensational. I can't remember who it was, but I think... was it Coleman that made a really important block as well when someone looked to get a shot in? But yeah, we just seemed slow to respond, didn't we? And, you know, is that down to a little bit of leadership on the pitch in terms of, you know, making adjustments? Is it, you know, waiting for a message to come from the bench? You know, I don't know, but we didn't seem to have an answer for it. So hopefully it's not something to be too worried about, because, you know, United are a top side, particularly at the moment, particularly at home. But it does seem to be a strategy team to now having quite a bit of joy with against us.
I think you're right, but I think that because obviously the pressure became so incessant as well, that's what leads to mistakes and lapses in concentration. And, you know, you look at both goals for me, and the first one especially, we had countless opportunities there to actually win the ball on the edge of the area, and that's a disappointing thing when that kind of thing happens, because that's inexcusable. Okay, you can get past one tackle, you can get past two if you're lucky, but not three, not four, and that was a really disappointing thing. Because if you go in it, you know, to half time at 0-0, okay, you got away with one. Like you say, Jordan Pickford was exceptional all game. I think he made 9 saves, which is a lot of saves to make in a Premier League match. Some easy. Some were exceptional. Some were very, very good saves, especially, you know, the ones where in the first half and some they're coming through one on one. You know, Pickford makes a couple of really good saves there. But I think that, you know, if you get through to half time, rightly or wrongly at 0-0, then okay, you can then reset, make the change. Obviously, Godfrey came off, a more defensive, a more disciplined left back in Vitali Mykhailenko. And then things may be different, but it's Sean Dyche alluded to it after the game. It's mistakes. We said it quite often, haven't we, over the last few years? When we make mistakes, it quite often leads to goals. And Seamus Coleman slips, you know, for the second goal, and it goes 2-0 at that point. I mean, at 1-0, I was thinking to myself, we have to do something quite big here to get back into this game, because there was nothing on the bench really, was there, to change things up? Obviously, Ellis Sims started the game. There was Neil Mopay, and then the changes that were made. We saw Mykhailenko, and the two lads came on in the middle of midfield in Tom Davis and James Garner for Idrissa Gueye Gueye and Amadou Onana, which we saw that change, didn't we, against Spurs as well. So in terms of game changes, there wasn't really anyone on the bench to actually make something happen. So you always felt the worst at 1-0, even though obviously you're only... Yeah, you're certainly not out of sight, Man United, but it's still, you know, 1-0 down at a side. It's not in great form, but doing well this season under a new manager, so it's always difficult. But it was just one of those games, wasn't it, where we just couldn't seem to get ourselves going. We left ourselves wide open, which is, you know, it's very, very un-Sean Dyche in a way, isn't it, I mean, the XG was off the scale for those who were into that. I think it was over 4, which is really, really high. I think that was only surpassed, by the way, by Liverpool against Arsenal yesterday. I think Liverpool had a higher one than what United had against us. But we shipped a lot of shots, especially first half. And you know, it was disappointing in that sense that we found ourselves so wide open. But what's your take on the mistakes, Pete? Because we have this discussion all the time, don't we, how disappointing it is to make mistakes that lead to goals. But it always seems to be the case, wasn't it, with Everton, in terms of, you know, a couple of slip-ups and the ball's in the back of the net. We've seen it so often this season, we've seen it so often in previous seasons. Seamus Coleman, who's been fantastic, by the way, you know, since Sean Dyche has come in. He hobbled off, didn't he, late on for Nathan Patterson. It's always frustrating, isn't it, when, especially in a game when you're fighting for scraps and fighting off scraps, to make mistakes and then go 1-2-0 down is always frustrating, isn't it?
It is, but I know it's a football cliche, but against the top sides, the mistakes get punished and then they get highlighted, don't they? You know, I think sometimes against so-called lesser opposition, you can make mistakes that, you know, maybe don't end up getting scrutinised on highlight reels over and over and over again in slow motion. So I think it's important to have a bit of perspective. I think the Coleman slip's just dead unfortunate. I really do. I think it's one of those things. You know, he's not meant to do it. I wouldn't even call it a mistake. It's an accident. You know, he slipped up. It's led to a goal, and you've just got to move on. I think the bigger mistakes, if you like, are probably the more subtle ones. The ones that we were just talking about in terms of, like, you know, the midfield pressing, the space. It's about what happens in front of the back four, isn't it, before those passes come through. The McTominay goal, I thought we were a little bit flat-footed. Maybe, you know, he was able to come in, and it's quite a simple run, really, isn't it? I know it got lots of, you know, plaudits and praise, which it will do on Sky, but it was a simple run, and I think it just caught our defence flat-footed. But I think the back line were looking to pick up that many runners. You know, McTominay's probably not the one you've got your eye on, and he's, you know, he's in form at the moment. He got a couple of great goals, didn't he, for Scotland against Spain, so his confidence will be high. So I just think it's one of them. I thought we were sloppy and wasteful. I thought United were fairly wasteful, but I just thought they played really well and they exploited our weaknesses. And you know, we came there as a doubly wounded animal, didn't we? They know we've had no centre forward. They know we're without Decore, who's been probably, well, arguably our best player under Sean Dyche. So they will have smelt blood and they will have wanted the first goal. And, you know, they played quickly, they played with aggression. You know, they were direct when they had to be direct. And it just wasn't our day. I think it's that simple.
And we'll have those kind of days. You know, we've had them already under the new manager. Where, I mean, you said it's probably the worst we've played. I think it certainly runs Anfield close. People will point to Arsenal. We were competitive against Arsenal. We're probably the better side for 41, 42 minutes against them before the first goal. But, you know, those three defeats that we suffered at the hands of Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United against three top sides, aren't they? So you can't have those kind of games where, you know, you don't create a great deal bar one really, really good chance for Ellis Sims. And that's the thing. It can happen. And, you know, as I said before, you know, at the start of the show, not many Everton fans would have had us down for much of anything. But obviously anything's a bonus, as we found out against Chelsea. That point was a real positive. Spurs in the end was probably a real positive as well to get that point so late on. But you know, we'll have games where, you know, hopefully Saturday as well, where we are that bit more competitive, create more chances. But there's a bit of a dilemma now for Dyche for me in terms of obviously what he does do with the Corey out for another two games. It's what does he do now? Me and Lee discussed this on the show, obviously last week, in terms of what he would do against United. What do we do in Decore's absence? And I think some people, maybe I was one of them, to be fair, underestimated Ablaye Decore. We know he's done well since he's come back in. He's, you know, he's got a couple of goals and a couple of assists under Sean Dyche. He's coming from the cold and done really well. And, you know, when he got sent off, you start looking ahead two games and thinking, okay, what can we do? And I think the general consensus was that James Garner will come in. Maybe even Alex Iwobi will go into a central position and play behind the front man, if you like, because he's got that energy. And we then obviously have Onana and Garner as per usual. But the big question now, Pete, is after seeing that on Saturday and And it didn't work. It didn't, you know, like, and for the reasons that you've already said, in terms of Damari Gray and Decore being two different kinds of second strikers, almost, if you like. So what does he do now? You know, we've got a couple of games before, as I say, before he is due back. What will he do? Do you think again? Obviously, Fulham's is the next game coming up. We've got Crystal Palace as well before we'll see Decore again. What would you like to see the manager do to address the situation?
I mean, I think there's an argument that, you know, at home on the Goodison size pitch, will he kind of fancy the 4-4-2? Will he keep it the same and maybe do a little bit of defensive and organisational work with the same players around, you know, around shape and, you know, particularly defending those diagonal balls in behind? Or what he did do as the game went on against United, he changed it up, didn't he? He eventually did put Iwobi in that kind of, you know, wasn't not quite a 10, it's more of a box-to-box midfield role. And he put Gray on the right. So could that be the team? Because I expected that to be the starting 11 against United, because I just thought it might be a little bit too soon for James Garner. He's still building his fitness. Obviously, Dice is, you know, still getting to know him, and he's got a group of players that he's trusted so far. So I don't think James Garner will start. I think he'll probably continue to incorporate him off the bench. But I wonder if that might be the change, whether he'll put Iwobi into that midfield role, just to give us a bit more sort of energy and legs, and, you know, tracking the abilities, you know, the ability to press and to break up play. And have Damari Gray on the right. Obviously, we'll lose a bit of attacking edge. But then, you know, do you lose something from Ellis Sims there? Because then, you know, then you don't have a direct attacker in and around him when he's holding up the ball. You know, it puts a lot of pressure on Alex Iwobi then to be really aggressive and to get forward. And what you get from Decore in terms of his aerial ability, you're not going to get that from Alex Iwobi. And I think at least what Damari Gray gives you is when the ball comes down, it's at his feet, he can go either side. And he's, you know, as we know, he's a top finisher. So I think it's an interesting one, but I expect Alex Iwobi to maybe come in centrally. And I wonder if he'll put Damari Gray on the right-hand side.
Yeah, I mean, Gray on the right-hand side is always a bit of a dilemma for me in terms of the fact that defensively, he's not as disciplined as others. And that's why, as much as people might take exception to Alex Iwobi and his form over recent weeks, when he gets asked to play on the right-hand side, the reason being is discipline. He's better, you know, when he will cover. So if Seamus Coleman is overlapping, you will get a bit of cover from Iwobi. And he's a bit more settled there and a bit more trustworthy than a Damari Gray, who at times, you know, when it comes to chasing back, he's great for it for a little while, but then a fatigue seems to hit him quite quickly. So it's always a bit of a struggle, that right-hand side, and that's why I'm just not sure whether we'll see Ellis Sims drop out again and him then just say, okay, well, let's go in there with Damari Gray as a striker, as he's done in recent weeks, as we've seen obviously since Forest Burnley. And then I said this last week, maybe say to Onana, well, you go play a little bit further forward then, and then bring in a James Garner to sit in with Garner Gay. You know, because James Garner can't play in that advanced midfield role for me in terms of is, you know, he's not an Ablai Decore in terms of what he brings. He's not overly physical. He's not, you know, he doesn't play with this intensity in terms of his closing down and his pressing. He's very much a technical footballer, so to speak. He's lovely on the ball. He's got a decent range of passing. He can do the simple things well, and his decision making looks to be pretty sound. So it's difficult that, you know. So I just think we might see Sims drop out again and Gray go central with somebody in and around him, which is a shame really, because I think Ellis Sims will get more chances at Goodison Park than he would do and does do away from home. You know, we started two games, one at Anfield and one at Old Trafford. Two notoriously difficult grounds to go to anyway for Everton. And the kid, bar that one major chance, has had very, very little to feed off. With the best will in the world, It's not his fault, you know. But it's gonna be a real dilemma for the manager, because the game on Saturday it's not in the must-win category, but obviously we saw at the weekend some results went our way, which we're going to have. Some results didn't go our way. You know, we seeded sides. Obviously, Leeds lost to Crystal Palace, you know, substantially 5-1, which Palace now 2 wins out of 2 have pulled themselves away. Leicester lost, obviously, to Bournemouth, who were in and around us as well. We saw Forest go to Villa and get beat. Southampton, obviously, they lost at home to Man City. It was a real mixed bag of results, really, wasn't it? Obviously, Wolves beat Chelsea to pull themselves away a little bit. So it's one of those games now where we need to pull ourselves back in, out of the bottom three in terms of goal difference. But we know that this round of games coming up next week in terms of who's playing who, it's absolutely huge. You know, you've got Leeds against Liverpool. Leicester have got to go to Manchester City. Tottenham have got Bournemouth. There's a lot of tough games for a lot of sides in and around where we are. So if we can go to Goodison Park and pick up 3 points, it'll be huge. But I just think it's a dilemma now with that game against Fulham. Then we go to Crystal Palace, who, as I say, they found this little bit of form under Roy Hodgson these last couple of games. You know, to go anywhere away from home and score 5 goals is impressive. To do it in a game which was, you know, it was a high jeopardy game, wasn't it? You know, the loser is in quite a bit of peril, and Leeds, that kind of hammering will not do their confidence any good at all. So that's going to be tough to go to Crystal Palace. And again, high energy team, what do we do in terms of replicating that without Abdoulaye Doucouré? So that suspension, I think, is probably being bigger, and is bigger than many people thought it might have been when he was sent off.
Yes, yeah, massively. And you know, it's as good as a new signing, isn't it, really? When, you know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago, Doucouré was on his way out of the club, and now, you know, it's amazing to think that, because, you know, like we said a moment ago, he's arguably been our best player. You know, let's hope that we can get something out of Fulham and we can plug the gap and solve the problem enough to come away from the next two games with, you know, hopefully some amount of points in each, because it's the weeks go on, it's getting worse and worse. I don't know about you, Mike, but can't take it. And the amount of times I joked this season that I don't know if I can sit through another Crystal Palace night from last season. You know, that for me was enough to last a lifetime. You know, I'm happy for that to be a distant memory and to be proud to say I was there. But yeah, I don't know if I can do it again. So I just hope that we get enough out of the next 2 or 3 games to start to pull away enough that we're not right in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, it's going to be nearly, isn't it, Pete? It's, you know, you look at your channel for the positives every single week, and like I say, the positive this weekend has been that we don't find ourselves in the bottom three, albeit by goal difference. We're back at Goodison Park on Saturday, and other sides have got really difficult games. Don't be wrong, Fulham, which we're going to discuss in a second, it's a sicky game for us, of course it is, but other sides have got some top sides who are challenging for the top four. So it's going to be a, you know, a good few weeks now, twists and turns. You know, obviously Palace after Fulham, Newcastle midweek at Goodison Park is always, you know, after last season, that's always an interesting fixture. So yeah, twists and turns galore. And if by magic our resident chef has just checked in after devouring his roast chicken, I said at the start of the show, when you do arrive, you fill everybody in as to why you were so late.
Oh, you've just dropped me straight in it there, haven't you? Cheers, mate. No, mate, it was a lovely roast chicken with all the herbs you can imagine, a bit of roasties. I think Pete's got his in the oven now, to be fair. So we'll have to have a... You can be the adjudicator out of 10, mate. Mm-hmm. You can be the Marcus Waring of the... what is it? Master Chef, that's it. The Master Chef world.
Well, you know, I've seen photographs of yours before and sort of after, which, you know, look fairly presentable and fairly nice. Look quite moist, has got to be said. But for those who like the use of that word in particular, so I look forward to seeing Pete's efforts shortly. I've got the leftovers from yesterday's roast dinner, to throw into a pan after today's show. So look forward to that as well. That's always, it's like Boxing Day when you've got about 8,000 roast potatoes left over, carrots and turnip, broccoli, Yorkshire puddings, and there's beef, there's gammon, there's turkey, everything. So I look forward to that. So yeah, we'll certainly come back to this conversation. But before we move on to Fulham, I'm just going to ask you, Lee. I said to Pete, we discussed on the last show in terms of what the manager might do with obviously Decore being suspended. We saw what happened yesterday at Old Trafford on Saturday, where Damari Gray was almost playing as a second striker behind Ellis Sims, and he couldn't replicate that energy of Abdoulaye Decore. A lot of us thought maybe James Garner would just come in. What do you expect to see on Saturday and beyond? Obviously, he's got a couple of games to deal with now in terms of addressing the absence of Decore. Now he's experimented one way and it didn't really come off.
Yeah, I think that last statement is bang on. I'm sure you guys have already mentioned it early doors there. I think it was a gamble he didn't need to take against United there for me. You know what I mean? He decided to sort of tweak it a little bit, obviously with Decore missing, rather than sort of keeping, you know, essentially the same formation, just changing the personnel by bringing maybe Garner in and asking maybe Onana to push on a bit further forward or whatever. But obviously he didn't do that. And as the first half clearly played out, I mean, he got it drastically wrong, didn't he? What it was for me is that he should have really, I think the top managers, we see it with Carlo sometimes, when Carlo was with us, and when they see it's not working, they change it straight away, don't they? And it was almost like he was going, you know what, let's dig in till half time and then address it then. Well, let's be honest, if it wasn't for Jordan Pickford, it could have been 5 or 6. There were the amount of space that Bruno had, and let's be honest, you know, as much as we absolutely despise him as a player, he's got a brilliant passing range, and he was constantly clipping over the top, no pressure on him whatsoever. And they were getting in every single time, weren't they? So for me, you should have realised early doors going, right, I've got this wrong. I need to flip back to what we've been playing and being more resolute. And to be fair, he said it himself, didn't he? Second half, he changed it. And then we got to grips with it a lot more. I know Godfrey struggled in the first half. But, you know, it's like absolute suicide going to United playing with a high line, isn't it? You know, playing with it. You know, it wasn't a fully... We weren't exactly on the halfway line, but we were sort of in... You know, in the between the halfway line and our own box constantly. I just felt he got it massively wrong. And, you know, weirdly, we were still in the game then at 1-0 until the error, weren't we? So, again, you've probably thought about that. So, yeah, I just felt it was a risk he didn't need to take. We're running out of games. I'd rather us have just been absolutely horrible, carry next to no threat whatsoever if we have to, and just basically restrict them to next to nothing in terms of shots. Almost a bit like the second half, really. You know what I mean? Where it was a bit of a dour game, and you know exactly what we'd probably want it to be as the away side, but we were 1-0 down. But going forward, in answer to your question, Fulham is a game now we massively have to win, isn't it? We massively have to do it. When you look at the fixtures now, we've got Palace after that. And let's be honest, Palace have had 2 great wins since Hodgson's come in. Not only the great wins, it's the way they've won as well. You know, they've had over 15 shots in both games, you know, which is very un-Hodgson-like in a weird way. But obviously, the players are clearly responding since Vieira's left. And, you know, that won't be a gimme by any means now, the Palace away game. If anything, that can now be marked down as a draw's a good result in a way. But with Fulham, I'd reckon he should... Personally, stick with Damari Gray. I don't know what you two think. I think you should stick with the same formation and bring Garner into the side in place of Decore. Maybe ask Onana to maybe play higher up, maybe breaking into the box late like Decore was, and then get Garner to maybe sit in the eight position, really. I'm not sure what you gents think, but I just think that was kind of working for us in a lot of games, and the fact that we were difficult to beat. And you know, let's be honest, Fulham have hit a massive roadblock since Mitrovic has gone out the side. They lost Paulinho for a few games, who's vital to the way they play. He's now back in the side, but they're still losing. So, you know, it now becomes a game where not only is it must win, there's a great chance we can win with the form that they're in.
Well, that's it. And we're going to go into a little more detail after the break. But like you say, in regards to the options that Sean Dyche has had, we mentioned there maybe Onana playing a bit further forward and having the straight swap for Garnett and Amari Gray being up front and Ella Sims being brought out of the side. But it's a big dilemma for the manager after, like we said, he's tried something at the weekend. It's not really worked, which is more to do with personnel more than anything else. So big questions he's got to answer and work on over the next few days before Fulham are in town. But we're going to take a short break and then discuss Fulham straight after that. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's time to look ahead to Fulham. Obviously, a bit of an Everton connection there with the manager, of course. Saving the second game of his touchline ban, from what I can remember. Obviously, Lewis Bowen-Morte, he's there as well. Anthony Robinson, he's a mainstay in that Fulham defence now, the former Everton left-back. So there's quite a few Everton links there. Aside, who up until recently were in fantastic form. You know, you look at how well they were doing, and you know they're not too far from you know European places now. 8 points off Aston Villa, who've had a fantastic turnaround. By the way, that's a different matter altogether. Emery's done fantastically well. They're up to 6th. Fulham down to 10th now. They haven't won a league game since they beat Brighton, which was mid February. They went away to Brighton 18th of Feb. Since then, a draw against Wolves. They beat Leeds in the FA Cup, but then got beat by Manchester United, which led to, obviously, suspensions, which we'll come on to in a minute. Beaten by Brentford, beaten by Arsenal, beaten by Bournemouth, and also beaten by West Ham this weekend. So not in great form. Mitrovic suspended after what happened at Old Trafford. 8 games he was given. So massive player for them, and one of the major goal scoring threats is obviously not going to be facing Everton. How much of a bonus is that, Pete, for Everton when we look at the threat that Fulham can pose? We look at the players obviously that they do have available. It's a big positive for us not to have Mitrovic, but also not to have the manager on the sideline as well.
It is definitely, and like both you and Lee just said, it's a little bit of an unknown quantity in a way, because we're coming into the game, you know, also having to make some adjustments, aren't we? You know, particularly with the absence of Decore and the problem that leaves Dyche with, and how he approaches that, like we were just discussing. I think in a weird way, that could kind of decide the game, really, in terms of whether we get that right and whether we're able to stamp out some of the mistakes that, you know, particularly we saw in the first half against United, where we just looked so vulnerable to counter-attacks, to quick football, because that's how Fulham play, regardless of whether they're on it or not. You know, we've got to give them respect. They're a top footballing side, and, you know, the three of us have always been big advocates of Marco Silva and the style of football he plays, and we know what to expect from Marco Silva sides from, you know, when he was our manager. That likes to play quickly, likes to play out from the back, possession football, you know, extremely aggressive, high fullbacks. I think it could be a really difficult game. I think it could be a really open game. I think it could be a game, surprisingly, with a lot of goals, despite how much we've struggled to score. I think it's a weird one. I really don't know what to expect from this game, because I think when you take Decore out of our side, with the way he's been playing, I think we're a completely different team, really. And like we're discussing, I think it's all about how we try and solve that problem and whether we can do a good enough job of it.
Yes, I think all eyes are on that position, aren't they? I think, you know, like you mentioned earlier on in the show, Pete, we're at home. So, you know, you'd expect us to approach this game slightly differently than what we saw at Old Trafford on Saturday anyway. Whether that leads the manager to maybe be a little bit more attacking in that sense, I don't think so personally, because I think under Sean Dyche, we've always really, in most games, created chances. You know, our XG has always been pretty good. Even at the weekend when we didn't create a great deal, we had the best chance before the first goal, we had the best chance of the game, you know, for Ella Sims. So we've always been creating chances, and Goodison Park has certainly been a leveller for us, as we've seen against, you know, Arsenal, for example, Spurs, You know, we beat Leeds, of course, beat Brentford, who were a top side at this moment in time, fighting for European football. And also Fulham, I haven't taken the full allocation of tickets either as well, which, you know, they will always have a more of a Sogans in there as opposed to the usual amount of away fans. But that midfield three, or the replacement of the Corey, is a massive, massive battle. But what are your thoughts, Lee, going into the game? Obviously, do you read a lot into the United game? Do you think there'll be any kind of hangover? Do you think Sean Dyche would allow that?
Well, we were unbeaten in four going into that game. And, you know, so we were building a little bit of confidence. It was always going to be a massive ask. You know, our record at United is difficult anyway. And United are resurgent this season under Ten Hag. They were unbeaten in 24, weren't they, going into that game at the weekend against us as well. So that tells you everything you need to know. You know, really top side. Okay, they had some key players missing, so we felt we may have a chance. Brentford frustrated them in the week, and they only just got past Brentford 1-0. So I felt we'd be a little bit more, like I said before, a little bit more sort of cautious, a bit more resolute. But we were just really, I'd almost say overly ambitious for Dyche, really, in that game at Old Trafford. Yeah, and the fact that he said after the game, transition in the Premier League is massive. And obviously it is. A lot of goals come from transition. But we were flooding bodies forward, weren't we, whenever we had the opportunity. Now, I know our goal scoring record needs to improve. Of course it does. And that won't improve if we don't flood, or we don't get bodies in the box. But there also comes a point where you need to know where you're playing and who you're playing against. And like I said, if it wasn't for Jordan Pickford having an absolute wonder half, it would have been an embarrassing scoreline. And, you know, the Fulham one's a weird one. It'll be a totally different game. Like you said, we're at home. Mitrovic is a massive loss. He's absolutely key to the way they play. And same with Paulinho. So if you remember when we had Marco Silva at Everton, you know, that number six was a vital role for him, wasn't it? And he lost Garner. And then, in the end, you know, it's well known he tried to get replacements and he couldn't get the people he wanted. But that six role for him is vital, and Paulinho's been one of the best sixes in the league this season in terms of, certainly when Fulham were on a really good run up until recently. Brilliant intercept and aggressive in the tackle, good on the ball. But then, as I was saying, Mitrovic, they've been playing Carlos Vinicius up front, and we'll all remember him from his time at Spurs briefly. And let's be honest, he's nowhere near Premier League level for me. He's just nowhere near that.
Don't say things like that. No one else won't go.
Yeah, well, I was looking at his stats actually before the podcast, and he's played 20 games this season, started seven, most of those coming recently. Scored two goals. So he's averaging 0.1 a game. He's averaging less than 0.3 shots a game as well. So, you know, let's be honest, he you wouldn't describe him as prolific. But that means Fulham have really struggled to replace, obviously, Mitrovic and the threat that he brings. And Mitrovic, not only a goal-scoring threat, his all-round game, let's be honest, is improved massively, hasn't it, the last few years? His hold-up play, his ability to win the ball in the air, his ability, you know, his strength in the air, full stop, on set pieces, on crosses. You know, he's a decent finisher on the deck now. He's improved that massively. So, you know, he's a decent all-round number nine. And let's be honest, he'd walk into our team right away. As he would with probably most of those teams in the bottom half. So he's a massive loss for them. And I just think if we can stay solid and hope that, you know, we really sort of start quickly, get an early goal, like we have done a couple of times at Goodison under Dyche, I think we can go on and win the game then. My worry is if it plays out and becomes a really tight game, then it's anyone's game then, isn't it, for me? Anyone, and it's almost like second half 0-0. Whoever scores here is probably going to win, because both teams, you know, certainly them more recently have not been prolific. And let's be honest, us all season just haven't been prolific full stop. So, I'd feel so much more comfortable. I think you two boys have said this recently on your recent ventures to Goodison. You felt more relaxed going when we, you know, if we've scored in the first half, then you have done for a long time. And that's credit to Dyche and the team and what they've done there, really. But I still think we need to score, you know, certainly first half or first 30 minutes if we can in the game, just to take the pressure off, because the crowd will know now more than anything, this game is as close to must win as you're going to get in the last 8 games of the season.
I'd love to go to Goodison Park and go into half time 2-3-0. I'd love a game. I said this that we have a game like that where we can truly relax and play with a little bit of freedom and take the edge off. And every game we do seem to play at Goodison Park, especially on the edge. You know, since Sean Dyche has come in, the Arsenal game, obviously we got the goal from James Tarkowski from a set piece, of course. But obviously it's on edge because the top of the table, the Leeds game, because of, you know, where both sides were and are on edge. The Villa game, dead tight game until we conceded the first goal and it didn't go our way. It's Tottenham, obviously what happened in that game. So every single game at Goodison has been quite an edgy affair. The fans have been great. You know, we've been there ourselves, but we can't give enough credit to the fans given how difficult the situation currently is for us as a club, but also off the field as well. Never mind what's happening on the field. Off the field, it's absolutely horrific as well. I'd love a game where we can relax a little bit more. I'm sure we've got it in us. You know, we've said already, we do create chances, especially at Goodison Park. We've created some really, really good chances. We're such a threat from set pieces. We just need sometimes things to go our way to allow us to be two up at some point and allow the fans to relax during the game. But the pressure's off them, really. The mid-table, the guarantee to be in the Premier League next season, not going to go anywhere. You know, if they turn around the form a little bit, they're not going to probably get European football, but they could finish up as high as sort of eighth, ninth, which would be a really good reflection for Fulham under Marco Silva. So there's no pressure on them whatsoever, and that's always a concern. We are playing under pressure. Probably the only good thing is we're not the first game of the weekend, we're not the last game of the weekend. The game, the R12 game on Saturday is Aston Villa against Newcastle, has no bearing on the relegation side of things. So we're all starting off on an even keel, and hopefully they don't flash up any scores during the first or second half as they did a few weeks ago, which was fed back.
I wanted to mention quickly as well, I think Willian's been a very good signing for him, by the way.
I was going to mention, you know, Willian. Yeah, he's been fantastic, hasn't he?
I've always liked him, and I think all of us have always liked him, haven't we? He's always been a top player, and you know, certainly at Chelsea he was, and he was a Brazilian international there as well. But you know, a few eyebrows were raised a little bit when Silva signed him, but he's shown how much of a good player he is. But you know, he's obviously a clearly very good professional as well. Looks after himself. You know, you're almost one of those players where you know what he's going to do every single time. He's going to fade and jink on that right foot. But he just, you know, he's so quick at doing it, that little shimmy. He always gets a yard and gets a shot off. And that Solomon, I don't know whether you guys have seen much of him. Solomon, who's broken into the side in the last few, well, probably the last, since we've come back from the World Cup, actually. He scored some good goals for him as well. He's looked really sharp, small, quick, skillful, almost like a young version of Willian in some ways. And he scored some crucial goals for them up until they went on this bad run. So, by no means will they still, you know, we've played them down a little bit with them obviously losing to a few key players. But, you know, those who I've just mentioned there can win a game on their own. And they have scored goals this season as well. So we still have to keep our wits about us, don't we?
Well, Willian's been terrific. You know, he's a player that they brought in, and a few eyebrows were raised. I know we had a little link with him ourselves, and so it was all, yeah, you know, he's too old. He's 34 years of age, but he's been fantastic. I think the likes of Decordova Reed in the midfield, he's a threat. He carries a threat all the time. You mentioned Solomon there. They've got bags of pace. They've got absolute bags of pace. I'm always weary, by the way. I don't know why. There's always certain players from certain teams you stick in my head. And for Fulham, it's Harrison Reed. He sounds like he works in an estate agent or is an estate agent. And he shouldn't be very good. But he's always one of those players who seems to do something against Everton and seems to play particularly well. And And I just think that, you know, again, we just got to get a grip of this midfield. The midfield concerns me because of what I saw, obviously, against a top United side. But that replacement or not replacing Doucouré correctly with the right personnel is a concern. And the manager, as I say, has got a lot of thinking to do to get that right. Obviously, being at home, like I said earlier on, is always a bit of a leveler for me, especially with how good the, you know, as a set of home fans we've been since Sean Dyche has come in. So that always helps and always pushes the players on. But it's another, it's going to be another nail biting game, I think. But it's an opportunity for us, if things can go our way, it's an opportunity for us to try and get a little bit of daylight if we can. Can we get a bit of daylight just for once? Can we just pull away, get a bit of a buffer? Some sides have started to do it. We've seen, you know, obviously Leeds got a win last weekend. Obviously, they got beat by Palace, but they got a win. You've seen Wolves beat, obviously, they beat Chelsea. Palace, we said earlier on, you've got a couple of wins on the spin. Can we pull away? Can we drop a few teams behind us and just start to feel a little bit better? But doesn't get any easier, that's for sure. But let's have our predictions. Let's finish off with our predictions. Lee, what do you think? Fulham, Goodison Park, Saturday at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, just quickly, I wanted to quickly mention your point now, which is a really good one. A few teams have managed to string a couple of wins together. I think West Ham have almost pulled themselves out of it a little bit now. They've got a game in hand. Palace, we said the same there. You know, Wolves as well had a vital win the other day. So I honestly think it's going to end up being between us, Forest, Bournemouth, Southampton and Leicester. I think the others will end up pulling away a little bit. You know, Leicester apparently have tried to agree a deal with Jesse March, haven't they, and failed again. I don't know what the hell Jesse March is asking for. That's twice it's broken down for him now. You know, the longer they go without a manager, the better.
But it appears to be Dean Smith, doesn't it, coming in?
Right.
Same deal. That seems to be the latest talk today. I think there was a bit of talk around Rafael Benitez, but all roads seem to lead to Dean Smith on a short-term deal.
That'll be an interesting appointment. Let's see how that plays out then. But yeah, so you know, what I'm trying to say is, you know, it seemed to be a sort of eight or nine horse race. That's slowly whittling it down to maybe five or six now. And, you know, we just, like you said there, Mike, just by hook or by crook, if we can just get two wins, you know, two wins or even two wins on the spin, it just suddenly makes you feel so much better. You know, and even if you're greedy, if we can try and get three wins out of the next five or something like that, I know it's not easy and I know we found it difficult, but I think it just takes away any sort of stress, doesn't it? And then you're not having to worry about the last two or three games of the season. That's my biggest concern. But yeah, going into Fulham, like I said, it's as close to, and I hate the term must win, I really do, because, you know, at the end of the day, you should want to win all games of football, but I just think this one here is a real opportunity with the key players that we said that are out, particularly Mitrovic. And I just think we've got to go all out and try and get this win. So I'm going to say 1-0. I'm going to say 1-0 Everton. I think it'll be super tight.
Pete?
I think it's going to be the opposite. I think it's going to be a really open game, end-to-end, counter-attack to counter-attack. I'm saying 2-2.
Oh, Pete, don't do this to us, mate. Don't do this to us. 2-2. Oh my God.
We don't want to be seeing that at Goodison Park, that's for sure. Definitely not. It's gonna be, like you say, Lee, the phrase must win is a horrible phrase, isn't it? No one likes that. But as you say, it's probably as close as it gets given where we are in the season. I'm going Everton 2-0. I think we can win a game by a couple of goals. I really do. I'd love those two goals to be in the first half, so I can sit in the second half with my feet up with the world's hottest coffee at Goodison Park. I've never known coffee to be so hot, by the way, at Goodison. You can buy it about 2:30 and it's still hot at 4:45. That's how hot it is. So hopefully...
Nothing like burning the granules and taking away the flavour, is what you're saying?
Listen, I lost my lips there for the Tottenham game. I lost my lips. It was that bloody hot. But yeah... Let's hope we can have a second half which is a bit more relaxed. Get a couple of goals ahead. Can we do it? I hope so. Fingers crossed. We're optimistic. Well, Pete's not. He's going for a 2-0. But me and Lee are optimistic, and hopefully it'll be 3 points for Everton on Saturday. But that's all for this week. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Hope you had a nice bit of time off over Easter, but back to the grind, of course, before we head to Goodison Park on Saturday afternoon. We'll be back ourselves next Sunday, back to our usual slot to look back on the Fulham game and look ahead to a difficult to a little bit of a resurgent Crystal Palace. So we'll catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.